Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's going on, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Kind of Funny XCast, your home for all things Xbox here at Kind of Funny. Of course, I'm one of your hosts, Snowbike Mike, and today we have a very special episode. Of course, if you're watching live, you can tell right now we're in the studio, everybody. The full Kind of Funny family and all of the XCast crew are live right now for your next episode of the Kind of Funny XCast. I have Barrett Courtney, our producer and director. I got Gary Whitta. But Gary, you're just one of my gaming dads. What am I missing here?
I was going to say, as much of a thrill as it is to be here in the studio with you for the first time. The first time, don't forget, show was born during the pandemic.
That's true.
So it's our first ever in-studio show episode. Together. It still somehow feels like a piece of the family is missing.
I don't like it.
How do we make that happen? How do we make that right?
It just happened. It just happened.
I'm here.
Live and direct.
This is so awesome. It is so awesome to see you all there in the studio, and I get to beam in like the man in the mirror and be a part of the show. This is awesome. So happy to be here.
Oh, it's awesome to have you, Paris. And you know you are one of my gaming dads. You are the host of the Kind of Funny XCast alongside myself and Gary. And it wouldn't be complete with all of us here today. We got a brand new set, brand new design, brand spanking new look. And, of course, I had to bring out the entire XCast family. So we have Barrett joining us here because we're going to talk some Gotham Knights in just a little bit. Our hands-on impressions when this should be dropping. You'll have the embargo now lifted.
Yeah, you said we were doing the show if you're watching live. No one's watching live right now.
We're
pre-recording this because of the embargo. Also, I'm just going to say it feels weird to like be on the XCast right now for the first episode.
It's a good look for you, but you look like you belong there.
Oh, thank you. I do consider myself to be left guy. You know, I know there's some debates on like middle guy and right guy and stuff like that, but being left guy feels right.
Good. Well, it does feel right to have all of us here on the table and, of course, Paris zooming in virtually. And so, of course, we got to talk about that. The Kind of Funny spare bedroom studio has now been revealed. It is out in the open. We are here live inside the studio. And, of course, both of my gaming dads were there for the big reveal stream. The marathon stream happened. You can catch that over on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames anytime if you want to see some of the shenanigans that went on and some of the fun intros. But, Paris, I'll start with you. What was your impressions of the brand new studio?
I mean, I thought it was just amazing. First and foremost, it was amazing to just see everyone. Like Gary, Barrett, it was the first time we ever got to meet, right? You know, in person, which was awesome. And just everyone else from the Kind of Funny family, like Cool Greg. I wasn't 100% sure. And I had to ask, I go, is that Cool Greg? And they're like, yes. I was like, okay, good. But it was so awesome to just see everyone. And then obviously other people that were local, you know, from the industry came in, you know, for the 24-hour stream and just be able to hang out with everyone and just all the shenanigans that happened during that day was very special. But the spare bedroom itself, as people may have seen just through the tour, it's incredible. It's incredible what everyone has been able to accomplish by creating this space and the fact that all of you are there now in the studio. And I think my favorite thing about it is the lab. I absolutely love the lab. It's just
awesome.
Everything you need from a content creation and streaming standpoint is at your fingertips. And I'm just happy and proud for everybody for what they accomplished.
If I wasn't concerned, like I would just let Andy live in the lab because I know this is what he wants to do. But he's got to go home and like eat at some point.
Yes.
But yeah, the lab is truly like I don't know how we. I still don't understand how we pulled that off in that space, but we did it somehow.
It's pretty wicked. And of course, check out the marathon stream or check out our latest Kind of Funny afternoon streams to see the lab live and in action. But of course, Gary Whitta, I got to give props to you and Paris because both of you stayed up late. I mean, you were with the late night crew on that marathon stream, and I gotta say, I appreciate you, Gary, for hanging out so late.
Yeah, I think almost 10 p.m., which for me is extremely late. Extremely late. As the father of a one-year-old, 10 p.m. is very, very late for me. But I was glad to stick around for pretty much the whole day. I think I was here for like a good 12 hours. I was here like before the stream started, and I was here until, like I said, around 10 o'clock at night. So I did like 12, 14 hours, I think I was here. But it just went by like that. It was so fast. Yeah. And there's so many highlights. Like, as Paris already touched upon, the chance to kind of have the whole crew together in person for the first time. So many relationships, both professional and personal, were kind of started during the pandemic. It's all been virtual. It's all been over Zoom and Discord. That, like, when I finally met Paris, it was kind of one of like, oh, he's real. Like,
real.
That's a real person.
Because
you only think of them as these kind of Discord disembodied heads. And it was a real thrill to see everyone in person after such a long time. And again, sometimes for the first time. And again, what a thrill to see this studio. I'm old enough to remember the original spare bedroom. We were all cramped in like this, kind of crappy little IKEA furniture. And then, of course, the place above the comic book store, which felt like a step up. But I mean, this is the step up. You guys have like graduated big time.
Smoke machine.
I feel like that should just be going the whole time, constantly.
No, it feels too much. It's too loud. The audio listeners would hate it.
I love it, though. I'll say what I said during the marathon, the reveal stream, is you guys have come so, so far from those humble beginnings, and yet it still feels like only the beginning. You guys have got a long way to go. As you get used to using this set and figuring out all the amazing things you're going to be able to do with this crazy technology, it's incredible. Like, I tell you, the number one thing that I heard from other people during the spare bedroom launch event was, I'm so happy for these guys. There was so much goodwill out there for you guys. You guys are the real ones, and you've built yourself up from these humble beginnings to where you are now. No one deserves it more. Couldn't be happier for Kind of Funny.
Thank you so much, Gary. But you also get to be, you're saying this like, you know, it's us going on our journey, but you and Paris, y'all are going to be here.
Yeah,
with
I mean, I'm mostly happy just because I get dragged along with you. Your glory is my glory.
I going back to what Paris said about like figuring out who was Cool Greg, I really wish that we had convinced both Paris and Janet Dea that like we had made Cool Greg up and he wasn't real.
Not a real
for like the longest time.
That would have been funny.
Oh man.
But guys, it was a great celebration all weekend long. We're now live and in the studio. Our first ever XCast in person. Of course, this is going to be a ton of fun. Episode 112. So of course, talk about those humble beginnings. Shout out to Alana Pierce.
Is it 112?
Way back in the day. 112. And today we're talking all things Gotham Knights and of course some really other fun games and news that you need to know about. So let's jump right into it, guys. Of course, this is the Kind of Funny XCast. We post each and every Thursday at 6 a.m. West Coast, Best Coast time on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. And of course, on your favorite podcast service around the globe. Don't forget, right now we are recording on a Wednesday. That will be our new recording days for all you Patreon best friends out there that like to watch the show recorded live. Or if you're just catching up, Thursday will now be the new post for all of you people out there watching on YouTube or your favorite podcast services. Don't forget, we're now in the spare bedroom, which means you get a ton of awesome content to go check out. If you'd like to go over to youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, you can see the big spare bedroom reveal with, of course, Hideo Kojima kicking off the big live stream and so much more. So please check that out. And it wouldn't be possible without your support. So thank you all so much for your support, whether it be on Twitch, on YouTube, and over on Patreon. It wouldn't be possible with you. If you don't have any spare bucks to give, don't worry about it. If you're buying games off the Epic Games Store, if you're upgrading your look in Rocket League, Fortnite, or beyond on that Epic Games Store, you can use our Epic Creator Code, Kind of Funny, anytime at checkout. Help support the team totally for free, and you can help us out with that. And talking about support, we want to give a big shout out to our Patreon producers for the month of October: ID Raven, Fargo Brady on YouTube, Delaney Twining, James Hastings, and Casey Andrew. Thank you all so much for your support. This week, the Kind of Funny XCast is sponsored by Shopify and Raycon, but we'll tell you all about that in just a little bit. Guys, let's jump into the show, and it's all things Batman, Gotham Knights, because the Bat family is together, just like the XCast family is together. And I thought, you know what? We should bring in Kind of Funny's number one Batman super fan, the resident who knows all things Batman and Bat family, Barrett Courtney. Right now, if you want to get ready for Gotham Knights and you want to feel the hype of all things Batman Arkham, you can go check out right now, youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, Batman, a Batman Arkham series retrospective. That's all things Barrett Courtney talking about Batman in the games. So that's pretty special. I see you wearing.
Did I throw you off?
You're wearing the Court of Owls mask live and in person. Barrett, I'm going to kick it to you so I can save my breath. Let's talk about Gotham Knights. Of course, set us up. What do people need to know about if they've been living under a rock? And then let's talk about our impressions thus far.
Beware the Court of Owls that watches all the time.
It doesn't sound great.
It doesn't sound great.
No. Maybe stick.
What if I do it here? Okay. Hold on. Beware the Court of Owls.
Listen, I did an entire episode of the X-Cast in a Master Chief helmet.
You did do that.
Ruling Gotham from a shadowed perch behind granite and lime. They watch you at your hearth. My computer turned off. They watch you in your bed.
We need all of it.
Speak not a whispered word of them, or they'll send the Talon for your head, Mikey.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the kind of...
I was Barrett all along.
Gotham Knights.
He fooled me. He pranked me. He got me.
I got you, Gary. The first game from WB Montreal in 9 years, almost a decade since we've last seen this developer. They were developers behind Batman Arkham Origins, which was kind of the in-between City and Night when we had to wait from Rocksteady to get a new game. This is their brand new game. It's a new universe separated from the Batman Arkham universe, and it's kind of on the premise of Batman is dead, and you are playing as the Bat family who he has trained along the years, coming together to protect Gotham in the absence of Bruce Wayne and Batman. You have mainly single-player stuff. You can choose which Gotham Knight you want to play as between Batgirl, Red Hood, Nightwing, and Robin. You can also team up. There's a co-op gameplay, just two players, where you can team up and go into one player's instance, help them out with open-world stuff, things of that nature. Taking more of an RPG approach this time rather than Batman Arkham, which was a little more like at first like linear story based, not a lot of like skill trees and stuff like that, pretty basic stuff. So yeah, this is a kind of a new take on the Batman universe. Of course, I've been talking about this game for years because I've wanted a Court of Owls game for the longest time. I'm a big fan of the new 52 Batman run. And yeah, I've been excited about this and to talk about it. But Mike, this butt.
Yeah, give me the butt. Let's talk about your feelings and impressions now.
It's been 9 years since this dev has released a game, and at the end, like after 9 years, after playing this game for 12 hours, I'm like, this is what we got after waiting 9 years, huh?
Wasn't worth
after
the wait.
After 7 years after Arkham Knight with Rocksteady, right? I know they're different studios, but you know, I think it's just okay. I think there's a lot of love in very specific areas. I love the story and the lore that they're building here. There's like little gems here and there where after playing a couple hours and I get kind of bored and fatigued, I'm like, maybe I should just put this down. But then, hey, I get a cutscene that's like, oh, there's like a really cool personal moment here that's happening between two characters. I think overall, like it just gets weighted down by a lot of weird decisions that feel almost like Ubisoft style, like open world decisions when it comes to like menu stuff and leveling up or like gear and stuff like that. And a lot of it comes down to, I think, what Arkham Origins had problem with. It's way too big of a map. Stuff feels bloated in ways of quest lines. And then just the world is just not interesting to kind of roam around in outside of doing a main quest line or doing a major side quest line, like taking down Harley or Mr. Freeze or something like that. So there's a lot of head scratchers there, but there's I can tell that there's heart in it. And yeah, we'll go through it kind of breakdown by breakdown of what we feel about specifics, but those are kind of top level thoughts right off the dome there.
Yeah, that's really well said, Barrett. I'm actually really impressed with your top level thoughts. I'm 10 hours in right now and I'm just a little bit above you. Okay. I would say I'm having a good time. I'm actually really enjoying it. I'm getting lost in this story. I think I was apprehensive at first when we talked about the changes, like you said, right, of now going to a co-op style Batman game without Batman, of course, right? And being in the Bat family, I am a Robin stan. I love Robin, but I like Damian Wayne. I don't like any of the other Robins.
I would have preferred Damian, I'm going to be honest.
Exactly. And so I was on the fence already when I saw this lineup, but playing it right now, I'm actually having a blast. I forgot how much I missed that Batman universe, right? Yeah. Getting caught up in the characters and the lore. And as you brought up with the Court of Owls, right, this is one of those mystery villains to me, right? Mm. As someone who doesn't read much of the comics, is just kind of a Batman moviegoer and video game guy, right? The Court of Owls has always been that, like, question mark of, what is that? How do they make a fun story out of that? And I think right off the jump, right, the opening cinematic cutscene had me on the edge of my
seat. Let's not say too much about it.
Yeah, I'm not going to say anything about it, but I'm going to say, man, oh, man, it's so good, right? Yeah. And from that point, I was in. And so I've been having a ton of fun with the world that they're creating, the story, right? But then, like you said, I do agree with you on the open world. I think it is kind of lackluster. You open up the map and you pull it back and you go, oh, my God. This might be too big, is right, Barrett. And so that was my worry when I saw it. And then when you're roaming around in it, it's very quiet.
Yeah.
It's not lived in like myself, Gary, and Paris have spoke about before of what makes a good lived-in world. What makes you say, oh, wow, I want to stay in this world. Yeah. This world felt empty to me, right? So it was, hey, I'm going to go from point A to point B, and I'm going to just get this turn and burn done.
And that's the interesting, like, when you go back to the old Arkham games, like, City, when you go back to City now, it feels so small. But it's really dense with all of the things that you can find, not even in quest lines, but just, like, oh, this building is a reference to something that's happening here, or and just little things like that. And even Arkham Knight, which was the biggest of the Arkham games, like it felt jam-packed. And I think with WB Montreal, they just have like a problem with like they aim too big but don't have enough stuff to actually fill in the amount that they're going for, which was, again, the same problem I had with Arkham Origins way back when. I think... The other kind of just talking about open world, and then I want to toss it to Paris because I know he's played a little bit, is that the major side quests feel like few and far between. Like I'm 12 hours in, and like the only outside of the main quest, which I don't want to like give anything away, like all I've really ran into is like Harley and Mr. Freeze, which is like really weird, and it's a different pace to Arkham Knight, where you're getting introduced to like so many side missions in like just the first couple hours, and you're like, oh my god, that's going to build up to this villain and stuff like that. And so there's just like weird little decisions that I don't know, it just again makes me scratch my head.
Yeah.
Paris, I want to know from your perspective, how are you feeling overall so far with Gotham Knights?
So just for heads up, I only have about 3 hours in because I played on PC and the PC review codes were delayed compared to the console code. So I haven't had a week time.
60 frames per second.
Barely. That's a discussion for another day. But I want to say this. I've not played it enough to have a full opinion about it. So what I'm about to say, I reserve the right to change my mind down the road. I do not like this game. I don't like it to the point where I don't want to continue to play it because I'm such a huge fan of Arkham City, of Arkham Knight. I even really enjoyed Origins as an example, and this feels like a step back to me. I'm not a fan of like just the actual gameplay itself, the actual fighting. To me, it feels sluggish. And I think part of this is I've on and off since 2020 been playing Arkham Knight on the Series X, right? This Arkham Knight feels like a superior game to me. Kind of to your point, Barrett, just Gotham City feels more dense and alive compared to this. I've been primarily playing as Batgirl. I'm just getting on the cycle and going from point A to point B.
Yes.
I really don't care about anything else that's happening.
And
speaking
to that, I do kind of like riding on the bat bike compared to the bat tank in Arkham Knight, right?
It is fun, I give it that.
But also at the same time, and this is again another Arkham Origins problem that I had of like traversing in Arkham Origins just like wasn't engaging. Same with this game. And like the second I opened up fast travel in Arkham Origins, I would always fast travel.
Yeah.
Same with this game. I would like the second I was able to open up fast travel points for each area, like I don't glide around. Like I'm playing as Batgirl, so eventually Janet talked about it in her preview of eventually you can unlock a glide, which like in my head that should just be what all of them have from the beginning, and it's weird that you're unlocking that as an ability. But eventually when I unlock that, it's just like, and zip lining around, it's like I'm just not getting any joy out of exploring. I'd rather just fast travel so I can just quickly get to the next main quest line or side quest line and stuff like that.
Yeah, and even building off of that, the bat bike doesn't feel as engaging as I want it to, right? It's not as fast. It's not as sleek. It almost reminds me of when we played the recent Saints Row, and I spoke about how that just driving felt clunky and almost like you were driving a tank. The Bat Bike feels the same way. It's not fast enough. It's not moving the way I want it to, and it just kind of becomes a boring, like, slow-paced ride. But, Paris, back to you. What else are you feeling on that one?
I mean, like I said, I'm still very early on, but I also wonder from a difficulty standpoint, I believe medium is the default, right? That was like the standard difficulty. I just left it at that. I almost feel like I need to bump it up. It feels too easy to me. I feel like I'm not being challenged in any of these fights that I'm doing so far. And maybe that'll change as I progress along. I want to be clear, I'm very early in the game. So these are just my early thoughts as I'm playing through it. But I can't help but feel a sense of disappointment because I remember that initial reveal when we saw Gotham Knights, and I was very excited for this. I thought, wow, this is going to be awesome. The co-op, Quarter Vowels, what we're going to be able to do. And then what they delivered, like I said, it feels like, did this need another year or two in the oven? I don't know. I don't know if this is necessarily the Arkham successor that I was looking forward to. It just doesn't feel like it. I would still rather go back and play the, you know, the Arkham Knight or Arkham City games.
I might later on down the line on a certain piece of content talk about the philosophy of if this is an Arkham successor and whether it needed to be. I feel a lot of that, a lot of the excitement when it was first revealed to me, Paris, was like we're finally getting Court of Owls adapted in a very big way. And I absolutely loved that. And even when I was talking about like liking little story and lore chunks, like, even though, like, I am a comic fan, you were talking about, like, experiencing this for the first time, it's a bit of a mystery to you. Knowing it, like, what the original story was and, like, the kind of New 52 universe, I like how they're, again, being as protective of spoilers as I can. Like, you know, obviously they're adjusting some things because in the original Court of Owls thing, Batman is alive. And so I like how they're fitting it into this new universe. And there's cool things here and there that I'm like, oh, like I wouldn't have thought of that. Mm-hmm. To me, it felt like big picture stuff when it comes to Court of Owls and other elements. It felt like the overall story and plot was like brought together by super fans of the New 52, which like really speaks to me. And that's why I continue to play it. Like I felt that last night, Paris, where I played for an hour and I was like, I think I just want to turn this off. I want to keep playing. Like I'm 13 hours in at this point. But at the same time, I'm like, because I'm such a huge Batman dork, I'm like interested in the story stuff, but just not engaged in the gameplay, unfortunately.
Yeah. The story. Go Paris.
One more thing I wanted to throw in there. How are you feeling about the dialogue? I feel somewhat underwhelmed by that as well.
Stiff at some points. So like, it's funny, Greggy, when we did Kind of Funny Games Cast yesterday, brought up Dead Space and like we talked about, is this a 2023 game? And he talked about some of the emotions and reactions of Isaac in that kind of setting, right, during our preview. And the same happened here where I giggled a little bit of like, man, the dialogue is still stiff. Animations of NPCs or the characters is still robotic and like, oh, I'm just
and that's why I brought up like the Ubisoft comparison, because there's so many of those little intricacies when it comes to that, like, or I'll just keep it on dialogue for now, where it's like, it's not even, I was having that back and forth, it was like, is it just like bland writing? I think it might be more of the performances though that like just don't sell it, because I think there could be performances that like make the make the words come off the script in a way. I definitely have been feeling that, Paris. But then there's also gems where, again, I got to I was about to turn off the game last night, like only playing for an hour, and then I got to a really emotional cutscene that was well acted and well written and stuff like that, and it's all over the place where it's like, there's so many highs and lows with this game. It's hard to focus on just one
thing. It's a wild one. And the cool one is focusing on that Bat family. Like some of the scenes like you brought up, right? It's like some of them really work. And it's like, oh man, seeing this Bat family come together is very cool. They're playing with each other. There's a couple cool dialogue moments. And then the next scene, it's like, oh, that doesn't feel good at all. Like what happened there? So it is interesting. But the combat to me, Paris, feels like a Batman game, right? Like I am lost in that combat. I like having the stealth still there where I'm working around the map. I'm trying to get the stealth takedowns. And what I'm really looking forward to, of course, during this review period, I can't play with any of my friends, right? Because they don't have a game code. They're not working at all. So of course now
I tried to hit up Greg last night and he was like, nah, I'm too cool for you. I'm playing cool games.
And so when I'm playing this, I'm excited about the idea of playing with one of my friends, right? Like that was what I was sold on, is these ideas of, here's these single-player games that you know and love, and I know I'm going to use Fallout 76, and a lot of people will go wild in the comments, right? But, like, the idea of, here's a universe that was mainly single-player that you know and love. we're going to try to test the waters and see what it'd be like multiplayer. Mm-hmm. This is that universe that I do want to try out, co-op and multiplayer. And yeah. I am excited. After what I've played of my experience, I can't wait for one of my friends to get a hold of this and us run through the city together, because I really liked that experience.
Yeah, I think for me, I haven't touched multiplayer at all, and I was kind of the lead reviewer on this. Check out the TikTok. I gave it an okay score on the Kinda Funny scale. But honestly, with all of the other design elements, I don't know if multiplayer would really change that score whatsoever. I do agree with you, though, of like just like the spectacle of like being a Batman related character and like being in Gotham City with each other, I mm-hmm. think is cool. But I think it would be cool for a night, and then I'd probably just go back to, you know, playing by myself as Batgirl and yep. stuff like that. Or if a friend's calling, hitting me up, like, hey, I want help on this thing, I can jump in for a little bit. But I doubt it's going to be like once I get in there, I'm like, oh, my God, my worldview has changed on this yeah. game kind of thing. I want to take it to some miscellaneous notes yeah. I have here of talking about gameplay. It's not Arkham. You know, it's not that rhythm combat that we know and love. And I think it was Tam and Lucy, when they previewed it for either Giant Bomb or GameSpot, they were talking about, like, once you get out of that, like, you do start to feel the flow a little bit. And I think Batgirl is the most, like, well-balanced between mm-hmm. stealth and combat and stuff like that. And once I got out of the Arkham headspace with combat specifically, I was like, all right, I'm really enjoying this. You know, I'm not dodging all the time, which is what I'm used to with Arkham and stuff like that, and like flipping over people. I got to play a little bit more like almost an modern Assassin's Creed RPG, which I am into. The difficulty, Paris, definitely the first few hours, it's like nothing. It's like you're fighting nothing. A lot of like non-reactions. They do amp up the kind of enemy varieties and stuff like that. That does make it a challenge. It feels good to a certain extent, but then, you know, there's weird design choices, like in the when they first revealed gameplay of the Mr. Freeze mission, right? You've got the like kind of boss fight with him that looks kind of like a raid boss, and they showed that off a little bit. I got to that recently, and I was like, when that was showed off, everybody was like, oh, this looks like a raid boss. Like, what's going on here? And I actually had a lot of fun with it, like kind of learning the patterns of him and all that stuff. And I do imagine if like I did that with a friend, that would have been like a really hype moment yeah. of us like slowly taking down the teleport. And I really enjoyed that boss. The only other boss that I've done 12 hours into this game was like a mini boss for the Harley quest line. That had like two like boss health bars. And I won't go too much into that. But the way that was designed, it's like you're fighting two bosses technically at the same time with a bunch of ads, and then you're also having to turn off like bombs and stuff, and you have to like kind of go back and forth. And there's just like some clunky design choices every once in a while, and it just, again, a lot of little decisions that kind of pile up, where you're just like, whoa.
I want to talk about those little decisions really yeah. quick before we start to move away from Gotham Knights. Of course, we talk about these RPG elements. We know the skill tree, right? And that's not new or different, but we do now go into a gear system and a crafting system, which is a very interesting decision to me in this style of game, where yep. you look back on all the Batman games, that was no idea, and I can't believe we did that.
No, it was
that at all.
And,
here's this game of, like, do I have to craft? Do I really want to craft? I completely skipped that. Every now and then I would craft a new item, put it on, and just skip
it
completely.
Have you not crafted a new suit or anything?
Oh, I have. No, I'm like putting that on the back burner because I don't
want to essentially explain it is like you kind of have to like craft new stuff throughout your playthrough, because you're going to unlock the ability to craft a suit that has like a power level. It's like essentially almost like Destiny in a weird way.
I don't want that.
And you kind of have to pay attention of like, oh, am I outputting the right, like, is my Batarang like at a good enough level to, and stuff like that, where I realized after playing a mission that I was kind of banging my head against the wall with, I was like, oh, it's because I'm using a level 5 Batarang, which is like, I think it's dumb. I think, at least for weapons and stuff, I think it's super unnecessary. I can kind of understand it with like building your Gotham Knight armor and mm-hmm. stuff like that, but I wish how it was designed, because this one reminds me a lot of, Greg and I have had this back and forth a lot, Assassin's Creed Odyssey, where there's so much gear and you're like just making whatever comes in, and it doesn't feel like I'm investing into anything too long, and that I think that sucks because nothing feels important at that point. Whereas yeah. Assassin's Creed Valhalla, you could start off with like one gear set early on and focus on that, and you're upgrading that thing, yes. and you play with that for the rest of the game. And I wish that's how they did it, mm-hmm. of like this is the look I want for the rest of the game. If I get something better 10 hours in, like, yeah, I'll change over to that. But, like, I feel like every 45 minutes I'm, like, changing to something new because I have to at a certain point.
And that final one is changing characters, right? I played my time exclusively as Robin because, of course, I am a Robin stan. But when I wanted to go to Batgirl, it felt like I was being punished because I almost had to restart, essentially, right? Like, there's some small pieces here where you have to redo very basic training modules, right? And you're like, why am I doing that? It is 7 hours in, and all I want to do is be a different character. I didn't like that.
Yeah, Greg and I have been going back and forth on this of, like, even if you want to go change the gear of someone else's character, you have to, like, go to the Belfry, actually, like, walk up to this suit, change as the character you want to play as, and then be able to customize all their stuff. It's like, it should all just be available in one menu so that when I do change into Red Hood and I equipped his stuff, like, 2 hours ago in a different menu, that's all ready to go. I don't want to have to do it for all four characters and stuff like that. And the way that if you're worried about, like, oh, if I'm only playing as Batgirl, but eventually I want to try out Robin, is Robin going to be super underleveled? That's not really the case because AP points that help you unlock stuff in the skill tree will kind of accumulate for the rest of your characters, and throughout the game periodically they'll give the other knights who you haven't been playing as, like, a basic set of armor. I think it's, like, maybe after story missions where they give every character, like, hey, you're at least this level kind of stuff for power level. But yeah, if you go back to, you know, I'm the opposite of you. I've been playing as Batgirl, and then I switched over to Robin for a couple missions, and I had very basic stuff, so I wasn't doing the same kind of damage I was as Batgirl. I was surviving, but I wasn't thriving as the other character. So that's, like, a weird balance thing. So I don't know. It's interesting of why they did it that way. I don't know.
Gary Witt, I want to bring you off the bench because we've gotten lost in the sauce of Gotham Knights, and you brought up beforehand the 30 frames a second, right? This was a big conversation before this game is set to release this week. Last week it came out, hey, this game is going to be hitting 30 frames a second on console, and this is a next-gen only game or a current-gen, whatever you want to call these new consoles. What are your thoughts on that? And, of course, when you hear all these impressions, are you sold on this game? Do you want to jump into this game?
Well, yeah, certainly. First of all, I want to thank the three of you for, I think, potentially saving me a lot of time, because I am the only one out of the four of us who hasn't played it yet. But I got a code along with everyone else. I installed it. I've been kind of mixed on it all through the preview period. Like, maybe, maybe not. I don't know. I'm not getting the best vibe off of it.
Right.
And certainly after having, you know, heard your impressions of it, I feel like I can probably save myself anywhere between, like, 3 and 10 hours of coming to the same conclusion you guys already have. A couple of things for me is, these days, every game that I choose to play, I look at through the lens of, like, opportunity cost, right? Like, in any game, anytime I'm playing a game, there's 10 other games I'm not playing with that time, right? Yep. And I'm a dad, I'm busy at work, you know, there's too many games, right? We've had, and especially this time of year, All the big bangers are coming out. Plus, you know, we're all dealing with our backlogs. When I finally get a chance to sit down and go, right, it's me time, it's Gary time, I'm going to play a video game, why choose this over any other number of games that are vying for my limited time and attention? And if your job was to sell me on this, like, you've not done a great job, right?
Yeah, we failed.
I mean, for all the reasons that, these all sound like valid criticisms to me, and particularly because I loved the Insomniac Spider-Man games so much. The first one, and particularly Miles Morales.
Yeah.
And this is obviously a very, very, very similar style, right? Yeah. An open world, you know.
Even more so than the Arkham games.
Superhero city. Yeah, because it's informed now by what the Spider-Man games did so well. You know, do core missions, you know, do critical path missions, go off and do side quests as they emerge, get involved in 360 degree, one against many combat. Like, it's the Spider-Man formula. I think what has now started to coalesce into, like, the broader superhero game formula, right? The whole superhero subgenre now is of this type. And that's fine, but if you're going to come to that genre, you better come correct.
Yeah. And you better respect the player's time.
Exactly. Yeah. And the Spider-Man games have set the bar so high that, like, why would I want to play a game that's like the Spider-Man games but not as good?
Yeah.
Like, I would just rather play something else.
I'm 12 hours in, I'll just be frank. Like, I think I'm only, like, a little bit halfway, like, through the story. So it's like, also, like, on top of that, a much longer game that I would say, like, either the Spider-Man games or any of the Arkham games at that point, you know?
And on the 30 frames a second issue that we were talking about prior to the show, I genuinely was kind of stunned when I saw this news on Twitter earlier in the week.
I think it, wasn't it, like, It was like the day before the studio launch happened or something. Yes.
Like last week.
Yeah.
This is something I've been kind of a little bit disappointed about across the board with the current gen, with the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox Series X, because I don't think anyone's necessarily expecting tip-top performance out of the S, so let's just talk about the Series X, is that at the end of the last generation, we started to see creeping in those options, right, for the compromise, right, between the menu. Do you want performance mode or fidelity mode? Every game calls it something different, but you've got to make a trade-off. And I feel like every game that I play now, I'm spending the first 20 minutes shuttling between the two modes trying to figure out which one I like better, and it's not always obvious, right? It's not always clear. Sometimes it is. I know that I generally tend to prefer performance mode, 60 frames a second,
have that frame rate,
especially
baby.
In a game that relies on like fast fluid movement, like this kind of game where you're swinging around the city and fighting like five guys at once and doing gymnastic type combat, that frame rate's critical.
It's interesting. I know others in the studio, I don't want to say any names, but others in the studio dropped off because it was really the frame rate that bothered them. And I don't know, like we're also like, it's been a couple of weeks since I've played a game because, you know, we're doing all of this and stuff like that. So when I opened it up on my, I'll be frank here, my PS5, I'm sorry, and it was 30 frames, I was like, I personally don't feel bad about it, but I also played the Arkham games all the time where on consoles and stuff, those were also 30 frames per second. So maybe I just, in my brain, I had that set expectation. But I will say the frame drops on console, for sure, I notice 100%, and it's often, it's a lot. I notice other bugs as well.
So quick,
the game
just
crashed on me several times as well. So
yeah, go Pairs.
Yeah, I know it's a little weird. We get our timing on me jumping in remote. But to go way back to what Gary was originally saying, with Spider-Man, it has set a bar. And I think that's also is what is setting up my disappointment right now with the Gotham Knights is I have an expectation now after Spider-Man. And if you're not getting close to that level, it does feel like kind of a letdown. But to go to this 30 frames per second thing, so I played on PC. You know, people know I have the RTX 4090, and even with that, I mean, trying to play at 4K with DLSS enabled, I'm barely holding 60. It's fluctuating maybe into the 70s, dipping into the 50s. And to see what it is on these next gen consoles, you can't help but be disappointed by that. We're at a point now in this generation where, like Gary said, we saw it at the end of last gen. Where's at least the performance mode in there? Give me the compromise so that I don't care if it's 1080p, it still let me play at 60 frames per second. And to what Barrett is saying, it's like, I don't want to play at 30 frames per second anymore. And I get there's artistic choices and compromises. I know various devs have been on Twitter the past few days kind of explaining some of this stuff. And I do not pretend to be a dev. I am not smart enough to do any of this stuff. So, you know, I get I could be talking out of my ass right now, but I would hope that we're now with these powerful machines that we can have 60 frames per second with all these experiences. And I guess from the explanation that Warner Brothers Montreal gave was this is untethered co-op, which is why they've capped everything at 30. I'll take them for their word for saying that, but I'll give the example. Look at what Halo Infinite is doing with their co-op. It's tethered. And I think that's what allowing them to keep their frame rate, obviously. I would rather see that in Gotham Knights than have an under the co-op. Because again, if you're working together, why am I on the other side of Gotham when we should be working together anyways, right? So I don't think too many people would be complaining if they had a tethered co-op in Gotham Knights either. So I don't know. I'm hoping this won't be the end of this. I'm hoping that eventually there'll be some type of patch and we will see some kind of performance mode on console. If I had to guess, and again, I'm not smart enough to do any of this, so excuse my ignorance, but this just seems like it's not optimized on PC or on console. I think it still needs some work.
Just my final thought on the frame rate thing, because the more I think about it, the more it's annoying me. when this new generation of consoles arrived, now more than a year ago, right? It's possible that I set my sights too high, but part of the reason why my sights were calibrated so high was all the hype and all the promotion was 4K gaming is finally here. It's finally arrived. The Sony PlayStation 5 has a fucking 8K logo on the box. What a load of bullshit that is. I mean, I'm sure technically there's some situation where it can drive 8K content, but no one's making games in 8K. Who's doing anything on the PlayStation 5?
We can barely do video in 8K,
Absolute. No, who's even got an 8K TV? Absolute nonsense. 1%. But even just on the 4K issue, when the game started to arrive, and I was like, oh, you can have 4K, but again, it's a compromise. You've got to compromise frame rate. This whole like fidelity versus performance. I thought that was something that was kind of starting to show up at the end of the last gen, and this new gen, no more compromises, 4K, 60 frames a second. That's turned out not to be the case. And again, I think hype has led us to have those unrealistic expectations. Now we've settled into like, we just accept these compromises exist, performance versus fidelity, try a little bit of both, see which one you like more. But at least games are offering that trade-off. I may be wrong, but this is the first major title that I'm aware of that doesn't even offer that option. No, you're at 30K, you're at 30 frames. Yeah. The co-op excuse that that Paris just offered, I mean, I've seen plenty of games where the multiplayer specifications are different, right? When you go into multiplayer mode, the specifications shift because multiplayer parameters are different. I don't know why they couldn't, if you're playing in single player, why that 60 frames a second mode. I don't know, this feels like the compromise between, again, I was like, okay, if it's got to be a compromise, maybe like true 4K, 60 frames and above is going to be something for the next generation after this. Mm-hmm. As it turns out, for right now, we've all kind of like settled into that compromise. We've had lots of interesting conversations about performance versus fidelity. But the fact that this game isn't even offering that, 30 frames a second just feels ancient to me. That feels like really last gen. And it's and frankly, in terms of when I'm sitting down, if I'm thinking about factoring what are the pros and cons of playing this game, that's a big negative for me.
Yeah, and I honestly think like when they, I forget when exactly they cut the last gen versions of these, because that this was one of those cross-gen titles originally. I wonder if they cut it because they were like, they saw Cyberpunk and 100% were like, we can't do Cyberpunk and we just got to cut it and we're just going to have the basic version on the next-gen hardware and stuff like that. Again, to end my thoughts, to bring it all back to what I said earlier on, y'all have been making comparisons to the heights set by, you know, the original Arkham games, Spider-Man. To me, I'm not even trying to compare it to those. It's just thinking about WB Montreal. We have not seen a game from them in 9 years, nearly 10. And like, this is what they had to show for it. And I know it's like really dour and we're talking about it like it's a 1 out of 5 bad game just because we've been talking about optimization and performance and stuff. There are good things in here, but it's still just like, it felt like a half measure of just like, man, I really wanted y'all to come out swinging for this one because, you know, even though I had my issues with Arkham Origins, there was something special in that game and I knew that they could do it on a next release and it just felt, I don't know, not what they needed to. The last thing I'll say, check the emails because they're pretty fun and no one tells you about them and you might have seen a tweet back and forth between me, Greg, and Janet talking about emails. That's what we're talking about because you maybe check out those emails. Maybe they got good lore. I don't know.
All right. Well, you know, a lot of conversation there. Is it worth the wait? 30 frames per second, make or break? We're going to find out this week when the game releases to everyone worldwide and we'll hear the criticism, the feedback, or the praise from all the fans out there. But we have gone long, so we got to cut really quick. And let me tell you all about our sponsors for this week's XCast.
Shout out to Shopify, the way that we and Rooster Teeth have powered the Kinda Funny store for years, and we absolutely love it. You can get this shirt there right now. Shopify makes it simple to sell to anyone from anywhere. Start selling with Shopify and join the platform, simplifying commerce for millions of your favorite businesses worldwide. Shopify has all the sales channels sorted so your business keeps growing, from an in-person POS system to an all-in-one e-commerce platform, even across social media platforms like TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram. It's how every minute, new sellers around the world make their first sale with Shopify, and you will too. Shopify makes selling simple so you can put yourself and your ideas out there. When you're ready to launch your thing into the spotlight, do it with Shopify, the commerce platform backing millions of businesses down the street and around the globe. Go on, try Shopify for free and start selling anywhere. Sign up for a free trial at shopify.com/kfgames, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/kfgames to start selling online today. shopify.com/kfgames. Next up, shout out to Raycon. I'm excited to tell you all about their new Raycon gaming series. The gaming series consists of two staple gaming audio products, the wireless gaming earbuds that are compact, portable, and universal, or the wireless gaming headphones that are comfortable and immersive. The HyperSync low latency technology lets you hear what you see lag-free. That's always great for games. Of course, because no gamer's just a gamer, Raycon's gaming series is just as perfect for music, podcasts, and crystal clear phone calls. Personally, I'm a huge fan of bumping these with a haptic vibration kitchen. It's the extra type of way that I like to live. It keeps me extra immersed in all of the sound. As always, you get a 30-day Raycon happiness guarantee with free shipping and returns, no questions asked. They also offer buy now, pay later options. So stay on the winning team and go to buyraycon.com/kinda today to get 15% off your Raycon order. You'll also get $20 off Raycon's gaming earbuds or $10 off their gaming headphones. That's buyraycon.com/kinda to score 15% off and even more savings. Buyraycon.com/kinda. Plus, this October, Raycon's got some special pricing up to $20 off. Don't miss out. Buyraycon.com/kinda.
All right, guys, let's get back right into it. We're going to jump into the news here. And Paris Lilly, I need you to get your tinfoil hat on because speculation, Steve, has to come out. Gary Whitta, this one is all about you, my friend.
What?
Because guess what? We're playing another round of Let's Play What's on Phil Spencer's Shelf.
Oh, right.
That's right. Last week, our friend Phil Spencer put up a post celebrating Fallout's 25th anniversary. Of course, keen-eyed gamers around the world noticed something different, something special that caught social media ablaze. That thing located at the top center of your screen, which looks very close to an Xbox Series S, but a little different, where gamers jumped to the idea of it being the highly anticipated Project Keystone, aka that Xbox Cloud streaming device that we've all been waiting for. At first glance, the device looks to be a smaller Series S with a small IR blaster on the front of it. Turns out it was a prototype for Project Keystone, but one that has been shelved as the company has pivoted away from that iteration and moved on to something else for the future of cloud gaming. Of course, Gary Whitta, we're seeing it live up on our screen. It's kind of small up there, but I know you've seen it on Twitter. I'll start off with you because you have been our cloud gaming dad. Would you be pleased with that on your shelf if this was the cloud gaming box?
I mean, I think it's going to end up being something like that for sure. I mean, again, that just looks like a shrunk down Series S, and so it may not be exactly. My prediction was it would be like an Apple TV style, like something like, you know, not much bigger than a deck of cards. And so far, everything that we've kind of speculated upon here on the X-Cards has come to pass, right? The Game Pass app built right, the cloud app built right into a Samsung TV. We predicted that. It seemed kind of like a no-brainer. That has come to pass. And this feels like the next logical step because baking it right into a TV is very, very smart. You know,
yes.
I talked before about, you know, you want to see those stickers along the bottom of the TV. And when you go to the store, you know, Netflix, you know, Disney Plus, Spotify, you know, Amazon, Xbox. Like, it's just going to become normal to see that. It's not going to stay Samsung forever. Other TVs will have it. But in terms of getting new gamers into that ecosystem, that's something that can only happen whenever people go out and buy a new TV, which is something you only, you know, buy a new one every, like, what, 5, 10 years?
Yeah.
And it depends on the person, but you're not buying a new TV. You can't just go, oh, let me go get a new TV because I want to get into that cloud Game Pass ecosystem. So offering a cheap, probably in the region of, like, $99, little hockey puck type box that you can... just looks like a little Roku or whatever. It may even be like a stick or a Chromecast-type dongle. The final, you know, form factor of it, you know, we'll see it soon enough. We will see it. There's no doubt in my mind that something is along this range is coming. It's just a question of what exactly it looks like, what are the price points, how they're going to make it work. I think we'll see that very, very soon. My guess, you know, time code it, is $99. Little HDMI thing.
Okay.
Maybe there's a version of it that comes with like a starter kit that comes with an Xbox controller.
Of course.
Packaged in as well. We're going to see it very soon. I think the fact that Phil's chosen to put this on the shelf is it's kind of an omen of like, yeah, it's coming. We like he knows we're not stupid. Everyone was going to come to this same conclusion.
It's funny because they've been way more subtle before. Like this was a very clear like. Hey, look at the thing clearly on the top shelf.
I mean,
right
I don't know,
the
fact that it looks like a little miniature Series S tells me it could have been written off as like a little promotional tchotchke or something.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Uh-huh.
Again, I don't think it will look like a little Series. Again, my guess is like an Apple TV size, just an HDMI thing. I think they will ship it with a controller.
Yeah.
I think you'll see it in the early part of next year.
Personally, I like this box. I want something to showcase on my display mantle. I don't want the stick that's just behind the TV. I do want something to show a little bit of that Xbox love, show that off. So I actually really like this. And if this was what it is going to be, I love this idea. This is what I want.
Greg, I think, brought it up at some point. He hates having like the Google Chromecast like kind of sticking out up into the side and stuff. So I like it. I think it's sleek. I think it's cute because it's just a little tiny baby, little Series S. Look at it. It's so adorable. the question I have for y'all, more speculation, where do they announce this?
Oh, see, that's where I was going to kick it to our guy, Speculation Steve Paris. It's your turn now, because Gary talked nothing but timing. And, of course, why put out a tweet? Why get this excitement right now? If it, we're not looming, right? We can't wait a whole nother year.
I mean,
year,
is there, Paris, is there a chance that this is a holiday product? I mean, it seems like that would they would have to really move.
All right, so before I answer that question, I want to circle back to one Mr. Phil Spencer and point out the fact that he sat on the XCast set before we did.
Yeah.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
When Greg showed me that video, I go, you got to be freaking kidding me. He's already been here? Couldn't believe that. But to answer the question, actually, I don't think it'll be this holiday. I think they announce this at CES, because I think what happens is they'll announce this along with other TV partnerships as well. So it'll be kind of be a combo of, hey, if you buy the latest LG or Samsung or whatever TV brand, the Xbox app is going to be built in moving forward. But if you already have a TV, guess what? We got you covered. Like you said, Gary, $99. We're going to give you a controller, 3 months of Game Pass Ultimate. Here you go. Cloud gaming, here you go. You'll get your wife and anyone else that doesn't want a game. Now we're going to make it easy for you. There you go. Here it is. So I think CES makes a lot of sense.
So far as the box itself is concerned, I don't think it necessarily needs to be tethered to an event. Microsoft can just put out a video and say, hey, here's a new thing. Yeah. But, I mean, the CES argument makes sense in terms of if they were announce new TV partnerships. Yeah. Right now it's exclusive to new Samsung TVs. If they say, hey, you know, LG, Vizio, you know, we're adding a bunch of new manufacturer partnerships, obviously it would make sense to do that at CES, which is still the flagship event for like the broader, you know, consumer electronics landscape. But in terms of just announcing like their dongle, their hockey puck, their whatever it is, they can do that enough news that they don't need another an event around that to get eyeballs on it. People are going to react to that.
I like the Paris poll.
No, please go ahead.
I was going to say, I like the poll of CES Paris. I think that's better than the Game Awards, right? I think you go to a larger market and you show off what this is, not to gamers. The gamers already know about this, right? I think you go for a different market here.
Right, because that's the whole point of cloud gaming. We're already gaming, so we're buying hardware. It's not us. That's why I keep using the wife analogy. My wife isn't a big gamer. They're trying to get people like her into this, so you try to make it as easy as possible. Have it built into the TV or something that you're just simply plugging in to the TV and it becomes this plug and play experience. Pick up the controller. Now you're playing all these games. The other point I wanted to make on that, because I agree with what you guys are saying in that I don't think it'll be a simple plug in the back type of thing. It will be something that's a little bigger, because when I was at Summer Game Fest and I got to test out the Samsung TV, it was mentioned that the reason it's on these newer model Samsung TVs is there is a little bit of extra processing power that is happening inside the television set that maybe legacy TVs won't have. So I think whatever this dongle is going to be, there is going to be some, or set-top box, whatever, there is going to be some type of processor in it to basically enhance the cloud gaming experience, maybe potentially help with reducing lag, things like that. So yeah, I don't think it'll be a teeny tiny thing. I think it will be something similar to what we saw on Phil Spencer's shelf, but it makes a lot of sense to have it, because not everyone's going to go run out and buy a brand new TV. So you got to have something that's readily available and affordable for people to go pick up if you want to get them invested in cloud gaming.
The other really nice thing about having a cloud gaming solution in your living room hooked up to the TV is, as you know, I still have a little bit of nervousness anytime I'm doing cloud gaming based on the Wi-Fi connection. Maybe it's spotty. At least in your living room, I think there's a better than average chance you can actually plug an Ethernet cable into that thing.
And then
you're golden. Then you're pretty much guaranteed to have a good... They always say, like, if you want to have a good experience, I'll always plug in a cable. There's absolutely 100% this box, whatever it is going to have an Ethernet port on the back, so you can plug it in and get the best possible performance over the cloud.
At least with like my experience, because I haven't done any like cloud gaming Xbox side, but with the PlayStation Plus deal where you get to stream like PS3 games and stuff like that, I did test that out on that and Ethernet in and stuff like that, because I'm still not completely sold on cloud gaming, Wi-Fi and stuff like that. But yeah, Ethernet in, it's like, there's barely any latency. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Now, moving on, because we are running a little bit late. We got to keep this tight. We're
going to
end with controllers right now. We have a very special controller, and more controller talk right now. So, Gary Whitta, you are a controller collector.
I did not know that was a thing, but that combines many of my interests in one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so, Baird, tell us what you have here in your hands for the audio listeners.
So this is a Persona 5 Royal. It's out this Friday, I believe, on all platforms, which is insane to think about with Persona, and Game Pass Persona 5 Royal. And, yeah, our friends over at Atlas sent us this. It seems to just be a sticker that they just, like, firmly put on to. So it's not even really, like...
What's the Razer logo? Is this a Razer product?
Yes. I believe so.
Because it came with the Razer charging
port. Yeah, so it's got the charging port as well that also has a Persona sticker. So, I'm...
That is sweet.
Yeah, I can check out more of Persona 5 Royal on Xbox, which I have been playing on Series S. Performs great. It's not like a super intense game. Mm-hmm. The only thing... My thing here, Mike, and this is just me... Because you got the weird D-pad with like in-betweens and stuff like that. I'm a weird JRPG boy where I like my D-pad separated to click through menus and stuff. Especially in Persona 5 Royal. So that's the only that's my only gripe with playing Persona on Xbox. But outside of that, it's a great game. It's on Game Pass, so you have no like reason to not check it out. 120-hour JRPG is maybe like decide if that's worth
your time
or not.
I love that it's on Game Pass.
Yeah, it's insane, but yeah, it's fantastic. So check it out. It's one of my favorite game of all. Time.
So Barrett,
it's one of mine.
Barrett, I got a surprise for you.
Have you been playing it, Paris?
It is on my PC, and it has been played.
Wow!
I'm very early into it because obviously we're in review season. There's a thousand other things that we have. I'm digging it.
Hell yeah, you are, Paris.
Seeing me investing some time into this. But to the point, I mean, and in full disclosure, Atlas sent over review code, so I've had it for a few days, but. It's on Game Pass, and the fact that this is the first time a Persona game is on Xbox, go check it out. And it's on PC, the Xbox app on PC as well, so you don't even have to play it on console if you want. You can check it out on PC, so definitely do that.
And if you have Steam
I will be
Deck,
checking in on my progress.
I don't know if it's cloud gaming as well through Game Pass.
I'm not sure.
But if you have Steam Deck, you could probably hook that up. It's also, on PC. It's not the most optimized on PC, I'll say, so there's... Other platforms.
I'm just so glad it's on those other platforms. It's one of those games where, like, it's so good that you have to be, like, evangelical about it.
And
you
just want as many people get to play it.
Yeah, you want as many people to experience it as possible.
On my update for Game Pass, cloud, console, and PC for all
you
Xbox gamers. So you get it on everything. But let's talk controllers for just a little bit longer before we wrap up the show, because the day is now here. For all you Xbox fans that love the Xbox Elite controllers, you've said, Mike, XCast crew, Xbox, we want to customize it. The Design Lab is now live. You can now jump in and get yourself an Xbox Elite Series 2 controller with all the customization options that you would like. Going down the offerings, they have 8 main color options to go along with, of course, the black rubberized grips. You have black, white, purple, pink, red, orange, green, and blue. They have customizable bumpers and triggers, D-pad, thumbsticks, face buttons, and a nice personalized text to say, hey, Ka, you can't cook.
Got him.
And the best part, I want to give them major kudos on, of course, if you are an Xbox Elite controller gamer, you know that it makes the Elite controller for, of course, the carrying case, the back paddles, and the extra thumbsticks. If you go down deeper into it, you can customize all the accessories.
Wow.
And that is my big positive there, is I am impressed that you're allowed to customize the back paddles, which is nasty, and the carrying case, which is a very nice touch. So shout out to them. Gary Whitta, before I go on my rant, because I'm about to go on a rant here, I'm gonna let you give the positives here, because I'm a little more critical than you here.
Well,
Gary.
I was surprised to hear that you were on the critical side of this, and I do want to hear what your points are, because I was actually pleasantly surprised. First of all, if you go back and look at previous episodes of XCast, when we talked about this, how we would love to see the Elite controller come to Design Lab. It was like, I don't think they would ever even do it. And then when they finally did it, I was like, oh, yeah, but the initial look was, oh, but the customization options are really limited. Now that I see it, it actually looks to me a little like they went farther than I thought they would. And a couple of people have been posting their creations. Janet Garcia, I think, posted one that was like this kind of orange and gold. Kind of, it looked really badass. Oh, man, you can create some really cool looks with this. So I've actually been quite impressed with the customization options and how good it looks, especially again all the way down to the accessories and the case. Mm-hmm. I like it. What don't you like about it?
So I will give them major props for the accessories, going above and beyond for that and having that forethought. Very well done. Where I fall, Gary, is once again we returned to Design Labs and I felt like we took a step back. Right, the color options, the pattern designs, right? When we had that first initial design lab, we had worked so much. We had grew with this team of different colorways, different patterns that aren't just the plain generic pattern or even just the camo that we see on the basic controllers today, right? And so when we relaunched Design Lab recently, it felt like we took a step back. We hit the hard reset button, and that's all well and good, but it felt like we took so much away from where we were, right? And so now I look at the Elite controller, and I know it is all well and good that we finally can have a purple Elite controller, but man, oh man, the black rubberized grips take up so much space on that Elite controller, and having just 8 very plain basic color options there just doesn't really feel like I'm putting my personality out there and customizing it to my fullest extent.
Well,
right?
So
damning.
It's interesting. When I was talking on previous episode of the show about, like, I kind of felt like if they were going to do it, it would have to be more limited.
Yeah.
So I had that already priced in a little bit. Like, I kind of felt like it would. For some, I'm no manufacturing expert. I just felt like the materials involved, and it's a more high end controller. I just feel like they're not going to be able to go like full on Design Lab. It's going to be more limited than that. And so it has come to pass, and so I just kind of feel like, yeah, that's kind of what I expected, but it's still very cool. Again, what did it for me was seeing the rubber hit the road and people posting some of their creation, going, actually, that's a really good-looking combo. Like, I think it was the Janet Garcia one. I was like, that looks sick.
Yeah.
And so you can create some good combos, and I, again, overall, I think my expectations have been met.
Okay,
I'm with Gary on that. I'm definitely more positive on it than you are, Mike. I don't know. You may have even seen mine. I did the basic Leica colors again, trolling Ka. But if you saw Stella's along with Janet's design, oh my god!
Oh, maybe it was Stella's that I saw, because I think they both posted them. It was the one that was like the orange with the gold accents.
Yes.
That looked really good.
We have an audience member right now. I'm really excited to see what he cooks up for the Elite controller,
the Nitro rifle controller.
Yeah, the Nitro rifle himself.
I'm glad he's coming up, because he said, and he can say it himself if he's walking up, but he said something on Twitter which I actually kind of agree with about the grips and not being able to customize those.
Let me take off the rubberized grips, Paris. Not only because of color customization issues, but I've had 2 Elite 2 controllers.
Uh-oh.
One I just got back from service because luckily it was still under warranty. But they bubble up, Mike. They're getting, like, you know, like bad window tint, Gary? I've had 2 Elite controllers now do that, where suddenly
There is something about the way you and Mike somehow manage to trash controllers.
Shit?
I don't know what it is about you guys.
Andy is good. Mike is the one who's terrible.
I don't know what it is. Like, I don't know if it's maybe the temperature in the room or something. Like, maybe there's something with the humidity.
You're
but
having too many heated gamer modes.
Exactly. But it's Melania and Elden Ring. But the bubbles start to form, and I luckily just got my Halo one back from service. And that's the second one that I already had that issue with. So going into it, it's like, I would love to customize this. I don't love the black rubberized grips, but is this going to be another problem that pops up again?
Thank you, Nitro Rifle.
Yeah, I'm actually with Andy, because I saw when he tweeted that, and I was like, you know what? He makes a really good point on that, because when I think even further down the road about customization, like, let's just say Starfield as an example, when that comes out, like, as cool as that Halo Infinite Elite controller is, I would love to see one that truly takes advantage of what, however you want to say it, the basic UI of what that game is going to be, versus what you'll be able to do right now with the Design Lab, and not being able to change what the grips look like as well. So it's good. I would say for me, this is probably about 90% what I wanted it to be, but there is still some wiggle room for improvement down the road as far as Design Lab goes for Elite controllers.
And we know we'll get there, right? We've seen the team. Even right now, if you go to the standard edition, there are more colors right now. They have introduced a number of patterns, right? But it isn't where we were, right? And it does suck to take that step back. We are in a positive. We do now have the Xbox Elite Series 2 controller customizable, which is great, right? And a good price point. I'm not mad. I'm not bashing an eyelash at all about that price point and where it stands doing all that and stuff. But I might be falling into the camp of, with the lack of color options, with the lack of just true fun patterns right now, I might just be more of a, you show me the Halo Series Elite controller. You show me the Starfield, the Redfall. Maybe I'm more along in the lines of that, where they go above and beyond.
Yeah.
Because right now, I can't go above and beyond.
You'll continue to see that. I mean, the Halo Elite controller obviously has a level of specificity to it that goes beyond what you can do in design lab. And for other, like, key releases...
That's like the Xbox One Gears controller.
Yes. Right. So, I think for, like, big, like, Xbox first-party type releases, like, you know, Starfield, you'll continue to see those special edition controllers. Again, for this one, again, the color customization...
Oh.
The suckiest thing about the Elite controller as it stands is you are stuck with like that basic black and it's now the white one.
That's
sick. It looks really, really, and it actually looks even better in person. The metallic tint on it looks really, really good.
Here's one I'll challenge the team for, and we can all think about this, or the Xbox, of course, design team and product team can let us know about this, is now that we've put out the basic Xbox Elite controller that doesn't come with all the fixings, right, but they also sell now the accessory pack, I would love to just be able to customize my accessories, right? I would like to get a bag customized with a specific color. I'd like to change up the back paddles for my thing and not have to do the full controller, right?
That's not a bad idea. So, like, custom, so you've got an existing Elite controller. You don't want to have to buy a whole new one, but you could, given that it already has, like, hot swappable parts,
exactly.
You could get just, like, an accessory kit and trick it out just a little bit.
I'd like to see that because I know there's a number of people who have the controller, like all of us already do, and maybe they say, hey, I don't find the colors that I want, or maybe I don't even want to buy a whole nother controller, right? That's a lot of money. Could we just customize the accessories and get a small little pack?
No, that's. I mean, I think about it right now. I mean, you could do it right now on their app. But like, if you think about even just like the basic black controller, it's an Elite controller, but it looks boring, right? Because it's black, we expect like custom controllers now. But even if you just swapped out the paddles and the thumbsticks and the D-pad for like, you know, that kind of like that burnished gold accent or whatever, that's going to make it pop, right?
And you've
only had to swap out the parts.
Yeah, I love the accents. My last question for you, Mike, on this topic. You're talking about patterns. What are available? What's available right now for patterns?
Right now on the Xbox Elite patterns, there is no patterns. It's just a standard color. But if you talk about the Xbox basic controller right now, patterns are going to fall into the camos, and they have a beautiful LGBTQ+ controller that you can dip, but you can't customize that at all.
So that's my argument here. That's why Mike's upset. He can't make his controller camo.
Yep.
End of story. We've solved it.
You got to have those Dynasty controllers.
I love that. And so that is where we're going to end the show, of course. Send us your cool designs over on social media. Let us know, is 30 frames make or break for you on Gotham Knights? Is this worth the wait? Are you and your friends excited to jump back into Gotham with a brand new Bat family? And most importantly, welcome to the brand new Kinda Funny X-Cast. You had the full team here today. We're all in the studio. We got a brand new set. We got Barrett always running the ones and twos. My two gaming dads are with us, and we got all of you riding alongside for many more episodes. So thank you so much for tuning in to another Kinda Funny X-Cast. We'll catch you next week. Gamers! Eggs!
I was waiting for that.